It's game time. Driven by Briggs Auto Lane. And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go!
Hello and welcome to the game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. I'm giving you an hour today, people, when normally I wouldn't because of baseball. That's because we have so much to wrap up and so much to talk about with the Elite Eight run that K-State made and the disappointing bitter end with a blowout loss to Loyola. We'll give you a tweet of the moment at 4:40, which is a good one. So much in the mix here. People turning from one side of the Bruce Weber issue to the other with the run, and then some going right back as soon as Loyola jumped out in front in that game. Cole Manbeck joins the show at 5:10 as well. He, much like myself, another guy that has been very critical of the Bruce Weber regime that now has changed his tune. So for those of you that think he's too negative, you'll want to listen in for that at 5:10. You can't be serious at 5:50 before these guys are done as well. You can text us at 59457. If you have not signed up, text KMAN to 59457. You can also tweet us at the game KMAN throughout the show. If you have questions or comments, you can call us at 537-1350. I'll start by saying this. There was a lot of frustration during the Loyola game, and I understand. I mean, they jumped out to an 11-point lead about midway through the first half, and quite honestly, by the second media timeout, you felt like, okay, this is probably not happening. I mean, the way Loyola took that game over, they just outclassed K-State for a day, and there's not much better way to say that. Now, I would stop short of calling Loyola a band of mid-major losers, like I just saw somebody do in my mentions as I was going back through them, searching them for a tweet of the moment. I think that's a pretty good team that's playing really well right now and is hot. They're 30-2 now when their best player's been in there. They lost some games when Clayton Custer was not there. I think Loyola is a legitimate squad, and they may darn well beat Michigan in the Final Four. But it sucks to get beat like that, and that is a tough way for it all to end. It might be tougher to take as a fan had it been like a one-point loss, like most of Loyola's games had been, where they hit a buzzer beater. But then I think if that happens, there's not as much backlash coming back on the coach. Like, this is the one way where you could invoke some of that legitimately from some people, saying, fairly fluky run here, but they get just waxed and aren't ready to play in the regional final. I will admit that that is not a great way for it to end. I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree with you on that there wouldn't have been as much of that if K-State had lost on a buzzer beater or something else in the final minute. But I personally, in fact, I even said this to the people I was watching the game with, I rather would have had it go down the way that it did than on a buzzer beater, just because I felt like you were able to come to terms with the fact that you weren't going to the Final Four over an extended period of time. Most of the second half, you're like, okay, it's not our day, and it's not going to happen. And for me, I mean, I can't speak for all fans, but for me, that was a lot easier to swallow than them throwing up a 40-footer at the buzzer to beat you and just literally rip a Final Four out of your hands.
I would almost argue I would have rather seen the close game.
Really?
Yeah. I know, Mitch is shaking his head at me, too.
It would have hurt too much, man.
It definitely would have hurt more, I would agree. But just for the sake of what I think is important for the program moving forward, having as many people on board as you can get, that would have helped. Now, I say all this, I think all reasonable people are back on board here. Like, if you are reasonable about things, you're understanding the significance of the Elite Eight run, and UMBC or not, you understand how good, and I mean good is an understatement, how tremendous the coaching job was to win the Kentucky game and really the Creighton game as well, playing without Dean Wade, and that there's a ton of merit in what was done there that means so much in the big picture outlook of the program.
Well, and I'm on the side of Tyler on this one about how it was hard yet easy at the same time to watch the blowout happen. If it's a close game throughout, you're on pins and needles. You're on the edge of your seat the entire time, and you can't do anything else but shake and watch that game. And I think with it being a blowout, it saved everybody a few gray hairs. It's not as stressful. We could save those gray hairs for another time. But if you look at it this way as well, I guess there wouldn't be as much backlash, I suppose, on Bruce Weber, which there shouldn't be anyway, if it was a closer game.
I mean, the simple logic here, the easy way to refute this, if there is no regional final, there's no regional final to be upset about. You got to get there to be upset about what happens in a regional final. So logically, I just don't think the two things mesh very well there. And I said this yesterday on Wildcat Insider, but Bruce Weber has now been as far in the tournament as any coach has here since Tech's winner. I mean, it's been since 1964, since somebody went further than that. So he has matched Frank Martin, Lon Kruger, Jack Hartman. Now, Jack Hartman went there multiple times, but as far as how far he's advanced in the tournament now, he's in the same company and same standing as those guys. And that is what was important for me to see. My outlook has changed a bunch for the future now. I'm legitimately very excited about next season and what this team can do. And it's all because I've now seen that the ceiling of what this program can be is higher than what I thought. Matchups help in the NCAA tournament. It's always a crapshoot. You can be a 4 seed and go down to a 13 seed that gets hot by winning a play-in game in Kansas City. We all know that and have seen that. But you keep getting yourself to the tournament, and at some point, you find a way to win some of those games. You prove something to me. I had not seen the program win a game that I will classify as winning a game in the NCAA tournament, and it now happened, and they did one in pretty emphatic fashion over Creighton, and they did another in somewhat miraculous fashion by beating Kentucky and a very good team and doing it shorthanded and battling through all the foul trouble. Proved a million things to me, myriad of things to me, not just the way that they won it, but the toughness that they showed. These are all characteristics that I had not seen really in spades from a Bruce Weber team yet, and all of a sudden they came out at the most important time. Well, I just don't think you can see that and take it as anything other than a big positive and a big step forward and a big-time proving ground for the program.
You just mentioned what I wanted to talk about, and I was listening yesterday to the first part of Wildcat Insider when you talked about this as well. But, you know, K-State going into the year, we could tell that the team had a decent level of talent on it. You know that Barry Brown, Dean Wade, Xavier Sneed, and Kamau Stokes is a decent nucleus to start with. We've seen K-State have solid players in their program under Bruce Weber. What we had not seen is toughness, especially in not just a situation like a middle-of-the-year conference game against TCU where it's a two-point game at the final media timeout, but toughness to the degree of being in the NCAA tournament against one of the favorites to go to the Final Four, against a team that has four lottery picks on its roster, and you don't have your best player. And for K-State to show that, I think, again, as you said a couple minutes ago, for all reasonable and rational people, was the final bit of evidence they needed to get on board with where this program is going.
I think two things we would have said we wanted more of going into the season would be consistency and toughness. And throughout the year, we saw more of the consistency. Eventually, it came in conference play. They were pretty consistent at beating the teams that they should beat. And then, unfortunately, also consistently losing to the better teams in the league, the other teams that went to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Kansas. Now, all of a sudden here, you've thrown on top of being consistent enough to go through the regular season, making it into the tournament, not being in a play-in game. Then you showcase the higher ceiling ability here, getting some of the bigger wins that we didn't see during the season, combining the win over number one Oklahoma from a few years ago with now more consistency, winning in the league, and then the ultimate displays of toughness to get the high-profile wins. It was sort of like everything coming together there. Now you see, okay, this can happen. Ask any program that's at around the same level as K-State or even a better program than K-State. It doesn't ensure that next season is going to be better or the same in the tournament, even if you're a much higher seed, which I think we would all anticipate them to be a much higher seed. But you now know that this coaching staff, and for the time being, this team, these players, have been on that stage and have handled themselves well enough to win games. And that holds a lot of value because now you feel like, okay, they can do this. Whereas before, you didn't have the evidence. So you're asking for a lot of faith there if this is going on a sixth year without being able to win games like that and just thinking, all right, are we just spinning our wheels here in the regular season and nothing's ever going to happen in the NCAA tournament? Because another thing I preach to you guys all the time, and this was always the conversation about the Elite Eight run and the tournament success that Frank had, there's nothing like that high of the NCAA tournament. And I think everybody understands that once again here. after just having gone through what we've gone through. That was much more fun than a 10-8 regular season. I would still tell you that that was more fun than a Big 12 regular season co-championship back in 2013. And that's why it's important to display that you can do things in the tournament, because it's how you're judged and it's what the fans really love and really want. There's nothing better in college basketball right now, especially than doing that, because the regular season is so boring and treated that way by most casual fans here. It's all about the tournament.
Well, I think fans are having a harder time getting excited about the regular season because they are realizing how little it truly means just so long as you're able to get into the tournament. Now, it's great to be a one seed or a two seed or a three seed or a four seed, but there's still going to be that degree of luck involved where getting those top seeds is really just giving you a few more marbles in the jar that's, you know, being pulled out of. It's going to give you a better chance because of the matchups and everything, but ultimately what matters is how good is your best. You know, talking exactly about the ceiling. And K-State's ceiling, we have found out, is actually pretty high. It is capable of getting to the Elite Eight, and we'll see if they can replicate that next season.
Always felt like and said high floor, low ceiling with what Bruce Weber's program had become at K-State, and now the ceiling has raised, I would say probably significantly, with seeing that they can get to an Elite Eight. Aided certainly by UMBC and some tournament craziness, but you happen to get fortunate in a year where there was craziness throughout the NCAA tournament. That is a part of it. That's just a part of it. Sometimes you're going to run into that. Sometimes you're going to run into getting the tough mid-major that bounces you in the first round. Some of that's on you. Some of that's coaching. Some of that's everything. But there's definitely luck involved in the tournament as well. So get there enough, you can draw some advantageous matchups like K-State certainly has. So it seems like, for most people, have a pretty good understanding of this, and it's rejuvenated things and pushed some excitement going into next year, and that should pay big-time dividends. There are still some, though, that aren't quite on board for that. At 440, we'll give you tweet of the moment as far as that is concerned, but we come back. We'll talk about a lot of demons exorcised in this run for Bruce Weber and company. That's next here on The Game. Back here on The Game, John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner. Tweet of the moment coming up 440, Cole Manbeck 510. Text us at 59457. Tweet us at The Game KMAN. I came up with this over the break. I think some of what I was trying to say about Bruce Weber having to prove that he could win at the level that he did over the past 2 weeks is reminiscent to me of watching that movie, The Foundation. Is that what it was called? The Foundation, about Bill Snyder starting up the program here. And, you know, some of those players are putting in all this work and all this work at the beginning of it. And at a certain point, you begin to question, all right, we're putting in all this work. We're still losing games. They lose the first couple games of 1989, the season there. And how can we trust you that we're putting in all this work and we're not actually seeing results here? Different situation being a fan as opposed to a player that's putting in the work, but you have the emotional investment. You have a financial investment with supporting the program. And, you know, all this investment, all this time spent with K-State basketball, and where it really matters, we're not winning games. Well, now all of a sudden, if you show that the results are going to come to that aspect, now you're going to put more into it. You're going to continue to put more into it. It's going to keep rolling and rolling, and I would expect the fan support to follow that. So there's a level of skepticism that comes with that, rightfully so. It's a prove-it business. Bill Snyder proved it once they beat North Texas and eventually started to be more competitive, and then Bruce Weber here has now proven it by winning in the NCAA tournament, which we had not seen yet.
One of the most positive aspects from this run, one of the things that I think you should get really excited about, is I saw that K-State Athletics did a great job trying to capitalize on this, putting out the deal, you know, immediately for, you know, for this many dollars, you get this many tickets to K-State basketball next season. And it sounds like the phones were ringing off the hook at that point when they put that out there. So one of the great things about this run is something that will not be experienced by anyone until next November, and that's maybe the Doom actually being back in Bramlage.
And whether it's your actual love just for the team, not so much as the coaching staff, whatever, it's fine, but support the team and understand that the program now is moving in the right direction. Because That's a big part of this here to me. I mean, Bruce Weber exercised a lot of demons over this run, and there's got to be a lot of personal satisfaction there for him. Winning in the NCAA tournament in general, he had always had that held over his head that you just hadn't won in 6 years. Now in year six, he wins games in the NCAA tournament. But also, beating Marcus Foster along the way, putting that to bed, that was definitely a statement. The guy that torpedoed the program, you went out there and dominated him with the guard that you recruit almost in his place when the rebuild starts, Barry Brown, to be your lead dog at guard. And then you take the program as far as any coach has taken it since the legendary Tex Winter back in 1964. I mean, that was like, obviously you'd want to get to the Final Four, but that was just like as big a victory lap as you could possibly get for Bruce Weber to do all those things in the span of about 2 weeks.
I mean, I think that a month ago, if you would have asked fans, what does Bruce need to do to win you over, that's like a check, like a point-by-point list of exactly what they would want. And I think that for most fans, they're going ahead and, you know, and living up to what those points would have been, and they feel a lot differently now.
And it's fine if you don't buy in and just have the total love that you necessarily did for a coach like Frank Martin. And this is really where I was going with all of this, is that, yeah, if you're going to back up the team and support the team here more because you love the team than the coach, that's fine. And that's kind of Bruce Weber by nature. The attention's going to be on the team and not necessarily him, whereas guys like a Frank Martin, a figure like that, it's going to be more about them just naturally because he's such a commanding personality and so much of the attention about the program is focused on his personality. That can be good. It can have its advantages and disadvantages. Bottom line is you just have to win. And if you're still bothered by some of the things that Bruce Weber says publicly, like I can understand that. And you know what? He's not going to change at this point. Like, we've seen it continue over and over again here. It's just not going to change. I even will harken back to a comment that he made, I think it was on Sirius XM before the tournament, and I saw heard some fans complaining about it. The fact that he said, Dean's hurt, and I'm frustrated because I thought we were a team that could legitimately make a run to the Sweet 16. And it's like, you're going to cap it at, hey, we could make a run to the Sweet 16. Like, I understand the frustration with that, and that type of stuff happens a lot. But you know what? It brings me back to a Kanye West song and a Kanye West lyric. You're welcome, Mitch. But he has a song where he says, everything I'm not made me everything I am. Everything Bruce Weber is not, Frank Martin, dominant personality, guy that generates excitement based on his mere personality alone, makes him who he is. He's just kind of the everyday guy who's out there talking in a stream of consciousness when he's out in front of the media, and it's not nearly as calculated as a lot of coaches would have it be, but that's who the guy is. And you're cut more slack if you are the Frank Martin sort of guy with that kind of charisma and that kind of personality. And I know that some of the issue that those who spurned the cult of Frank when we were doing this last year, the cult of Frank, the frustration there is, well, you guys are so suckered in by his personality and charisma. You know what? That's life, man. I mean, do people in the workforce that have more charisma tend to get more benefit of the doubt with things if they're more likable, have more charisma? Yes. But at some point, your production actually does take over. And if you're productive enough, it just neutralizes some of how much of that is really necessary.
It was something that you tweeted on Thursday night after the Kentucky game, and a lot of people said similar things, but I agreed with it 100%, and that is, you may not like a lot of the things that Bruce Weber does or how he executes things, how he phrases things, but if you're to the point where you're having to criticize an Elite Eight run or have some problem with making it to the Elite Eight, what are you doing here? Like, why are you still considering yourself a basketball fan if that's not going to be good enough? Because, got news for you, you're going to be waiting a long time between Final Fours, more likely than not, at K-State. And if you're not going to have if you're not going to be able to swallow your pride a little bit and enjoy a run to the Elite Eight, What are you doing supporting the team in the first place, or claiming to?
Well, it's just you're never going to be totally happy. I mean, if you're waiting for Bruce Weber to magically morph into somebody that is so carefully calculated and charismatic when he is dealing with the media and out in public, it's not going to happen, and you're going to drive yourself insane, and you're never going to enjoy what's going on. There's a threshold of winning and being successful enough that I think trumps all of that, and you can look at it and say, okay, man, I'm signed up for this kind of basketball that's being played here. May not be my favorite personality in the world, but if the results get it done, I mean, much like just, again, back in the workforce, working with people, you're not going to love everybody personality-wise necessarily that you're going to go hang out with and have a beer with all the time, but if they're somebody you count on at your office and they work and they get the job done, they do good work, then that's fine. Doesn't mean you have to love them. Doesn't mean you have to go hang out with them all the time. But you still support the job that they do. And I think you're in a scenario like that here. And I imagine that most people have gotten to that point. Because, look, I've been as critical as most people in the media. More critical than most, I guess I would say, about Bruce Weber's program. But seeing this happen and seeing what the table is set for next year, I mean, I told you today, I'm already looking forward to next season. I mean, mm-hmm. It hurts to lose that game to Loyola, but I'm looking forward to next season. I'm looking forward to having fun, relevant basketball. I don't care so much because of that. I don't care so much about the shortcomings and the flaws that can accompany the head coach.
I mean, if I told you 2 months ago, and I'm not just talking about you, but anyone, that here at the end of March, there would be legitimate reason to be looking forward to K-State basketball as much or more than K-State football next season, your head would have exploded. Like, there's just, this is absolutely,
I don't know,
crazy.
I don't know that I would go quite that far. I mean, football is pretty set up to have, a decent season, but it's not like we're expecting a 10 or 11 win season, I think, with the football program. So I would quibble a little bit there, but I think the point stands alone fine by itself. I don't think it needs to be compared to anything. I think it stands alone by itself. If you would say in 2 months you're going to feel legitimately good about where the program's at, where it's headed, and where it could potentially head way down the line in the future, then I would say that's pretty surprising to me, because it's been such a perpetual state of mediocrity and the same deal, having the same battles, the same fights, the same gripes that we have over and over again. I think to try and compare it to something else like that almost does it a disservice, because they've done so much to turn around the opinion of it. It can stand alone on itself. And that's a testament to not just Bruce Weber, but Chris Lowry, Chester Frazier, Brad Korn, the entire coaching staff, everybody with what they did. Shane Southwell, shout out to Shane Southwell, my guy. I'll throw him in there as well. Cole Manbeck's going to be on the show at 5:10. When we come back, I guess still not quite everybody can get on board. Either that, or they just lost it in the moment. That's why we call it Tweet of the Moment. The angry tweets from the Loyola game next. Texter writes in here, 59457, by the way, to text us. Is it fair to be a little disappointed with the way our remarkable run in the NCAA tournament ended? Well, first of all, I appreciate the use of the adjective remarkable run, because that's appropriate. It was a remarkable run, and yes, I think it's fair to be a little disappointed with the way that it ended. I tried to invoke that message at the beginning of the show. You can be disappointed with that, and in a one-game scenario, in a vacuum, as I like to say, that was awful. They played a terrible game. There's no other real way around it. They got outclassed for a game.
It certainly is not mutually exclusive to feel very disappointed in the way things went on Saturday, and also feel extremely excited about what ultimately happened this month and what has the potential to happen in the future.
Am I disappointed with the way K-State's 1998 football season ended?
Yep.
Hell yeah, I'm disappointed with the way the 1998 football season ended, but do I still love the 1998 team and think that they accomplished a lot, and do they still hold a special place in my heart? Yes. It doesn't have to be both together or nothing. It's not all or nothing. They can stand alone as two separate thoughts. Yes, you can be a little disappointed, but don't be this disappointed.
Do you remember when we used to dance?
It's the tweet of the moment. Tell us what your heart meant.
All right. It's been a little while. Tweet of the moment. When you're in the heat of the moment and you send out those angry tweets, we put you on blast here. Because this is honestly the segment that people seem to enjoy the most. I get more people saying, do this more often about this than anything else.
Well,
lead it off.
We'll start with Deanna, who says, it was in response to a Star article about Bruce Weber, you know, doing good things. None of these reasons are why I don't like Bruce. Bruce makes excuses and often blames players. I can't respect that. Win a national title, and I suppose, I'll have to respect his accomplishments. Until then, I'm still hoping someone will hashtag fire Bruce.
So become by far the best coach in school history by winning a national championship, and then maybe we'll talk. I guess that's what that one is.
Yeah.
This one I appreciate. Luke, I'm going to shout you out here because he sent this tweet and follow-up tweet, and then the next day said, oh, by the way, I should be nominated for Tweet of the Moment because this got away from me in the moment. That's what this is all about. I love it, Luke. So he said, in the game, question, does this change your mind on Bruce? Seems to be a terrible game plan. I understand they haven't missed, but damn. And then I responded and said, nah, not really. This doesn't change my mind on what's happened over the last 2 weeks, and it shouldn't. And then his response back after that was, so you're guaranteeing a Final Four next year? And at that point, I'm out. Okay, I'm not arguing with that anymore. Like, don't even know where to start. Then the next day, he just quotes it and says, hashtag tweet of the moment.
That's great.
I appreciate you, Luke.
That's great. From Calvin, I know this may be an unpopular opinion, but I'm still in the fire Bruce camp. We beat Creighton, which was a mid-major only 5 years ago. Beat a 16 seed barely. Beat Kentucky, whose oldest player was 16. I don't think that's accurate. And lost to an 11 seed mid-major led by Kansas guys that he didn't offer. Stop with the whole, like, looking at Loyola's roster, and I really hated that line of thinking.
Well, the Loyola part is the least damning, I think, of everything else that he said there. I mean, Creighton.
Good team.
Solid team. A lot of people thought that they were underseeded as an 8. That's a perfectly fine win to have in an 8-9 game.
Sure.
Yes, the 16 seed thing is some fortune. But Kentucky, I mean, come on. Like, even if it's a bad Kentucky team, you're talking about having a high floor. A bad Kentucky team, by their standards, still pretty damn good. And, oh, by the way, without Dean Wade. Here's Tyler. Pretty simple here. Not you, Tyler.
Thank you.
Just said, first weekend loss next year. Just guaranteeing it already. First weekend loss. Write it down, boys.
All right. Ugh. Oh, yeah, that one really, that one bugs me a lot more, actually.
I can tell.
We're talking about the future here. I've got a long string here for kind of my last one. Do you want to share a couple more first?
Yeah, here's Billy. He needs to go play Dean Wade into injury in the TCU game, which cost them a Final Four. Now, aside from the fact that I don't lose any sleep over not having Dean Wade because butterfly effect, him playing could have affected the game differently, for instance, against a Kentucky, something like that, and maybe you don't even get to the Elite Eight. I don't lose sleep over that, okay? Plus, they just got destroyed by Loyola. But if we're going to say that he played Dean Wade into injury, hasn't every coach that's ever had an injured player then played a guy into injury? I mean, you're literally putting them out there on the floor, and they wind up getting hurt at some point.
All right. So this guy replied to a tweet of mine and said, Bruce Weber is blanking terrible. Did not actually say blanking. The only reason we're here is because UMBC beat Illinois. Okay, so we're off to a great start. Great start by saying that UMBC beat Illinois.
I think Illinois won like 3 Big Ten games.
Yeah. He then goes on and says, enjoy the participation trophy. Then he says, we can hang it next to our fourth place in the league exceeded expectations banner. And then finally, if you really think an Elite Eight appearance means you're one of the best 8 teams in college basketball, you're delusional. We're not saying that in any capacity whatsoever. That's not remotely the point.
Just so bitter. just so bitter. No, it does not work like that, but that's the beauty of the NCAA tournament.
Exactly.
This is why we all love the NCAA tournament. Nobody thought UConn a couple years back was legitimately the best team in the country, but they got hot, they went on a run, they win the national title. I've got one more here to close off Tweet of the Moment.
Okay.
So I had tweeted about going to a sports bar after the game was over and just being inundated with drunk Loyola fans doing their cheers. I don't even know what they were. Scarves everywhere.
Gryffindor house.
I felt like I was in the movie set of Harry Potter, but everybody was drunk. That was basically how I felt.
And nobody was wizards.
Yeah, no real wizards, no real magic being done. And Grant responded to it and just said, take your shirt off and fight them. You know what? I appreciate that, Grant, and it made me laugh. And in the heat of the moment, that's what we need, right? A little laugh. So I feel like that was a good way to end it. Now, speaking of these Loyola people, all right, are you rooting for Loyola in the Final Four? We'll discuss next. Can I laugh at something here? Maybe will make me a little bit mean to do so.
Sure.
ESPN posted a picture that is legitimately a cool, cutesy story. It's a picture of Kansas assistant coach Jarence Howard's 9-year-old son writing a scouting report of Duke. And, like, it's pretty well done. It's actually it's more smart than you would think. Play pick and roll on Marvin Bagley, keep Trayvon Duvall at the top of the key, these sorts of things. And so it's great. It's got 12,000 likes, and I see it at first. I'm like, okay, that is a cool thing to put out there. Reminds me of when I was a kid and I would write my own top 25s for college football and that kind of thing. So then, though, the part that I found much more entertaining and funny is the first response. The first response is somebody who just legitimately quoted it and said, there, T-H-E-I-R with an asterisk. Like, beautiful. Correcting the spelling of the kid with there. And that probably made me laugh harder than I should, but I laughed very hard at that. Well done.
Nicely done.
Very well done. Loyola is in the Final Four against Michigan, Villanova and Kansas. I know nobody's happy about Kansas being there, but do you root for Loyola at this point?
You know, it's funny because there were so many similarities between how things happened with Loyola and how things happened with Butler. And I remember back to 2010, Butler could have gotten blown out by 50 the next game, and I would have been totally fine with it. I'm actually kind of on board with this Loyola team. I'm going to root for him.
Here's the biggest difference to me. The Butler situation was a team that we had all invested so much in, that K-State team. And they were a 2 seed, and they had been so good throughout the year, and it was by far the most fun we had had in a basketball season in most of our lifetimes. And to have them get so close, and it was a close game where you're leading at the under 4, to have that team get so close when the expectation was, hey, this is a team that from the beginning of the year, well, at least from about the end of the non-con on, you felt like this team could legitimately do something like make the Final Four. To have that come up so short against that Butler team, to me, it was much different. Now, I'm also further removed as a fan, as you know at this point. But to me, that was different, and I still hate Butler to this day because of that. I don't have the same feelings for Loyola because you think, well, this team already made a great run. It was going to have to end at some point, and Loyola was clearly the better team on that day, and they just came out and dominated, and I don't hold as much disdain for them.
There is certainly a big difference between how much your blood pressure will rise if I mention Gordon Hayward versus Clayton Custer.
Well, I will say this. The one part that bothers me, and it's more Ben Richardson than Clayton Custer,
well, yeah,
because of the
sure.
game that Ben Richardson had. If there's one aspect of it that does bother me, Blue Valley Northwest kids, really? We had to get housed by Blue Valley Northwest kids?
How good were they in basketball when you were in high school?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think they were necessarily dominant. It seemed like St. Thomas Aquinas was always the best team in the EKL. I mean, the way that it seemed to go with sports outside of Blue Valley and football in the Eastern Kansas League, it was like all the Blue Valley schools, we'd kind of somewhat, you'd be up 1 year, down the next. It seemed to rotate a decent amount. So I never thought of anyone as being like a power. Now, they had a great team. I mean, they went undefeated and won the championship when they had Mason Schoen and Richardson and Custer and those guys. So it may have changed by that point in time. But regardless, you just don't think of the Eastern Kansas League being a hotbed of basketball talent all the time. And it's like, really, it was the team with Ben Richardson and Clayton Custer who just developed over the 4 years. And now I got Ed Fritz hanging out in the stands, Blue Valley Northwest head coach. And it's just the podium turned into a Blue Valley Northwest show talking about all that. That is, if there's one part that bothers me about it, it is that.
And gentlemen, I'm proud to say that the championship game in my bracket is still intact. So I'm going to keep this selfish, and I'm going to say, no, I'm not rooting for Loyola Chicago. I'm rooting for Michigan and Villanova to get to the championship game and Villanova winning it.
It's really funny to me that the left side or the right side of the bracket is very, you know, chalky in how we've got to this point, whereas with Loyola and with Michigan, there's been some just crazy moments involved because, of course, Michigan hit the buzzer beater that got them over Houston to the Sweet 16. I'm way more interested in that game than I am Kansas and Villanova. Way more interested.
I think the Villanova-Kansas game has the potential to be a better game, but
yeah, maybe a better game.
I'm with you. I'm in it. Now, the Sister Jean part of this is really annoying, and that is getting annoying, and the scarves are annoying. The fans can be annoying, and so that part of it does irk me some too, but I think the team is a good story, and I think it would make for a more intriguing title game if Loyola were to make it.
Man, I didn't know until today that someone had asked Sister Jean what she was giving up for Lent, and she said losing. That's pretty – I can't hate on that. Like, I'm still on board with Sister Jean.
Well, my problem is not with Sister Jean. It's with the media coverage of Sister Jean.
Well, that's fair.
I saw somewhere today that a company that tracks how many mentions somebody gets in the media, she had 5 times the amount of media mentions in the tournament so far than Coach K did. She had like 25,000 as opposed to 5,000. The way that they're treating this. And Wyatt made a pretty good point. The team is such a good story, and it's being just totally overshadowed by this whole Sister Jean storyline. Some of their fans can be nice. We'll go to hour two. Cole Manbeck is going to lead things off. I got to go to baseball.
KS State Bank wants to be your bank. Find the solution you've been looking for at kstatebank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. KMAN, Manhattan. It's game time.
Time is now!
Driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go!
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the game. Tyler and Mason with you the rest of the way as John and Mitch are headed over to Toynton Family Stadium. John on the call tonight for K-State baseball against Oral Roberts. Mitch will be doing the PA from Toynton. If you want to check out the Bat Cats, first pitch set for 6:30, and pregame coverage gets started when we are done at 6 o'clock here on News Radio KMAN. In this second hour, you will hear from Cole Manbeck, the emotions that went through his mind on Saturday as K-State's magical run comes to an end in the Elite Eight. I will go into a little bit of a deeper explanation of what I thought was the most significant part of K-State's run, and it really has very little to do with the actual basketball that was played. It's been a wild day in college basketball as far as coaching hires are concerned. A couple of interesting names that are changing their locations, and we'll finish it off with You Can't Be Serious. We have some time for phone calls in this hour as well, 537-1350, 866-776-1350, and as always, you can tweet us at the game, KMAN, and at Tyler Dreiling. But we begin this hour talking with Cole, and John had a chance to catch up with him earlier today, so you do know that this is going to be a conversation with John and Cole, but just starts off here with Cole talking about the emotions that were going through his head as K-State came so close to the Final Four, but just did not have what they needed to have, to put it lightly, against Loyola on Saturday.
It is hard, especially when you get within one game of the Final Four and things seem to fall your way, to have a shot at that and get into that big moment. And I started making some plans to go to San Antonio this Saturday. I already had clearance for my wife to make the trip, so As a K-State grad, though, you know, I kind of knew in the back of my head there's a good chance that this does not work out and K-State comes up one game short. It's just particularly hard living in the Kansas City area with KU making the Final Four. You cannot turn on the news or, you know, any of the stations or sports talk radio up here without hearing talk about KU going to the Final Four. And, you know, that makes it more difficult just because of the fact that K-State could have been right there with them. And that would have been a pretty cool story to have both those teams in the Final Four together.
Well, I think obviously the bigger picture and the bigger story here is what this run does for the program. But just to start, since we're on the Loyola game, what to you was the most disappointing aspect of that?
Well, obviously the way K-State defended in that game. This is a Loyola team that, while they are one of the most efficient offenses in the country, especially at shooting the basketball, they were second in the country in field goal percentage offense. I still thought K-State, with the athletes they have and the way they've been defending, that they would be able to hold Loyola in check. And then the fact that, you know, K-State just was never in that game. You know, they're an 11 seed. They're a good team, but I can't get out of my head that they beat two teams in the regular season that either made the NIT or the NCAA tournament. Now, obviously, they made a run here in the tournament. They've beaten good teams, but, you know, they won all those games by a combined 4 points leading up to the K-State game. So I thought it would be a very competitive down-to-the-wire game. And, you know, K-State was just never really competitive in this game. They could not defend. And, you know, everyone talks about Loyola, you know, just couldn't miss, but a lot of that was on K-State. They were giving them layups, shots in the paint that were very makeable by the way they defended. And I thought by letting Loyola get off to such a good start, it really allowed them to settle in and relax, and K-State played up tight the rest of the way in an uphill battle.
Cole Mambeck with me here on the game. What's the proper perspective for what this run does for the program?
Well, it's a heck of a run, and I think it really settles everything down and brings the fan base together. So it was really something that was needed. And, you know, you can kind of look forward now to next season of having maybe more of a unified fan base come together and support this basketball team and the program and not hear as many naysayers about Bruce Weber and all the talk about, you know, rooting against him so that K-State can move on. I think K-State fans, for the most part now, are behind Bruce Weber and this coaching staff and these players as well. It's a really likable group of players. They play really hard. They're going to be good next season with everyone they return. It's really a perfect time to bring this fan base together, get Bramlage more of an intimidating atmosphere again, and, you know, make a run at the Big 12 title, at least contend with KU. I think K-State will probably be preseason number two team in the Big 12 behind KU. They might have the preseason Big 12 player of the year in Dean Wade. They'll probably have two first-team all-Big 12 preseason players in Wade and Barry Brown. And, you know, they're bringing in a very talented guard from St. Louis and Sean Williams, everyone coming back. So, you know, I think this season, this run that they made, you know, takes a lot of doubt out of people's heads. And a lot of the naysayers now are being a little more optimistic about the future of the program. So, you know, it's a really important thing that they've done, they've accomplished, and got K-State fans excited again about the basketball program.
It's really been since probably 2014-15, that second Marcus Foster season, where there's been this much excitement going into a season. How much of a difference can that really make, just having some excitement there and not as much apathy going into a season?
Well, I think it's significant. And I just think that, you know, it encourages the work in the offseason that the players are going to put in now. And, you know, they've now tasted the success of the NCAA tournament, and they've seen how the fan base came together as well and what this Elite Eight run meant to the fans. And, you know, I talk about the fans a lot, but it's really such a key aspect because these guys, you hear them comment all the time, you hear the coaches say it, they see the negative comments that are coming out from everyone. And so this kind of silences that, and silences some of the critics that are out there, including myself. And so I think it can be significant if these guys put in the offseason work. They've now tasted the success and, you know, want to make another run at this thing next year and get to push to the Final Four now. It's extremely difficult to get back to that place, which is what makes it so disappointing and frustrating to just come up that one game short. Because as you guys saw in the NCAA tournament this year, I mean, you can be a 2 seed, a 1 seed, and you get knocked out in the second round or even the first round. And so K-State could be a 3 or 4 in next year's NCAA tournament. And, you know, they're in the Sweet 16 potentially playing a 1 seed, and they don't have the breaks fall their way. So that's the frustrating part of it. But I think the program is on the right track now, and you look at the 2019 recruiting class that they're targeting. You know, they're in on a lot of the top 100 kids that are out there, top 150 recruits, potentially targeting and getting them. And you know, they're going to have a very good team next year. So I really feel like they've got some positive momentum with this thing. If they can keep it on the right track, they've got a chance to have some successful season consecutively here.
Cole Mambeck from the Powercat Game Day crew with me on the game. Totally with you in the fact that next season looks like it's a very bright future ahead. What to you would be the biggest question mark for the team next year?
Well, to me, it's still, you know, it's scoring in the post. I mean, you've got Dean Wade back probably in all likelihood. I think he will be back. And McCall Maween should make improvement. You know, he'd never played the five position before coming into this season. And now he's got a whole year of experience under his belt to get stronger in the offseason and really work at his game and become more of a dominating presence in the paint. So I think that'll help. But K-State needs another guy down there. They need a guy they can bring off the bench that can give you some points, give you some physicality and rebounding. And I think Stockard has a chance to be a decent player, but obviously wasn't there quite yet this year. I just think they need another dominant presence in the paint that just, you know, is kind of a tough guy that can really battle it out, give you 15 minutes in there. And then, you know, they could use a little better three-point shooting as well. They struggled on the perimeter this year. Kamau Stokes really struggled in his last 17 games, shooting 14% from three. So, you know, they could use another shooter. Maybe Sean Williams can give them another boost there, and then some of the guys within the program become a little more consistent beyond the arc, because offensively, you know, you saw in the NCAA tournament, they really struggled without Dean Wade. And so they could just use a little more scoring boost, and particularly on the inside and the paint. I think that's really where they need to target right now to try and improve this team a little more.
Man, did you just say 14%, 1-4 for Kamau Stokes?
He was 8 of 57 from 3 in his last 17 games.
Wow. That is a crazy stat. I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was that bad.
He was 23% from the floor in those 17 games overall. So it has been a very, very rough season for Kamau Stokes.
Well, Gene Taylor, K-State Athletic Director, was on with us on Wildcat Insider yesterday, asked him about a contract extension or a new deal coming up for Bruce Weber. He said that would be a part of the conversation that they have at the end of the season. Do you expect that to happen, and is that the appropriate move?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes sense to extend it with the positive momentum you have going on with the program right now. Move that contract date out another couple years, give them that extension and raise, especially with the momentum they're making on the recruiting trail right now. In order to really, really capitalize on the success of this Elite Eight run, I think you need to show confidence in your coach coming off of it to get him another extension so that he can go out and tell the recruits, you know, we're here for the long haul and we're really making a run at this thing. So I think it makes perfect sense to go ahead and do that. And I don't think you're going to hear the PR backlash that you would get from the fan base now by giving him an extension. If you would have done it after they lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament this year, if that were to happen, you know, that would have been a big PR hit, and there would have been a lot of noise. But after an Elite Eight run, I think it's a perfect time to do it.
Cole, before I let you go, are you going to get down on some Elite Eight gear? Will you buy any?
I am torn. I did not get any Elite Eight gear from 2010 when K-State fell short to Butler, and I did not buy any, obviously, after they beat Kentucky, because why would I buy Elite Eight gear until I knew if they were going to make the Final Four? So if they were going to make the Final Four, I was going to go buy up all that gear. I was going to buy up all the newspaper copies and frame them like I do with every big sporting event of my teams. But I just don't think I can deal with being reminded of coming up one game short of the Final Four any more than I need to. So I will probably not get the Elite Eight T-shirts that were being sold. I'll probably just fly to Zimbabwe or somewhere and try and get a Final Four shirt and pretend that it happened in my mind.
Does that mean you didn't get any gear in 2014 for the Royals?
Actually, I bought a 2014 Royals hoodie, World Series hoodie that was on clearance, marked down from $80 to $20. So I just had to buy it just because I thought that was a once-in-a-lifetime type thing. Now, fortunately, they proved me wrong the next year, and my closet is completely full of Royals gear, and I have a lot of framed pictures of Royals World Champion stuff.
Well, 2014 Royals, 2015 Royals. Has that become now the 2019 K-State Wildcats?
That is what I'm hoping for, John. Someone pointed it out to me on Twitter. And, you know, to me, this felt like the Royals in terms of you just feel like you had everything kind of fall your way to get there, and you didn't take quite full advantage of it, but they came right back the next year and took advantage of it. And so maybe K-State can do the exact same thing.
Cole, always appreciate the time. We will do it again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
You know, just piggybacking off of that, I also saw the comparison to the Royals' run in 14 and 15. Is Ned Yost and Bruce Weber just not a perfect comparison?
That's pretty spot on.
That's really spot on, because until the wild card game in 2014, an awful lot of Royals fans were not very happy with their manager. And they get to the World Series in 2014, fans get on board, and then we saw where it went from there. So
I think there are a lot of similarities between the both of them, too. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. Hopefully things work out just like they did for the Royals.
That would be awesome. Certainly a long way to go for that to actually happen, and I would definitely add in there that there is no KU in the AL Central that the Royals had to deal with, like K-State will have to next year. KU will be a very good team, as always, next year, so we'll see. But you can start to see some comparisons there for sure. Going to take our first break of this second hour. K-State baseball coming your way at 6 o'clock. But when we come back, what really stuck out to me about this run, that's on the other side. As Mason just mentioned, at 6 o'clock, it's been a wild day in college basketball with coaching hires, a couple of notable names on the move. We'll get into that at 5:40, and we'll finish things off with You Can't Be Serious at 5:50. Going back to K-State's Elite Eight run, and, you know, I've had several days to really let everything sink in, analyze everything, because when it's in the middle of happening, your brain almost isn't functioning 100%. I mean, it's such a whirlwind. The turnarounds are so crazy. You get one day that you can be happy about beating Kentucky to get to the Elite Eight, and then the very next day, you're on pins and needles all day waiting for the game to start. So it took a few days for me to compartmentalize everything. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that experience for me, because I think a lot of K-State fans will be able to relate to this. Now, Mason, where did you watch the game on Saturday?
I didn't actually see that much of it because I was still in here finishing up K-State baseball.
Oh, sure.
Running the board for that. So by the time I got home, K-State was already down double digits, and it was frustrating watching about 2 minutes. So I had just gotten back from going home over spring break, so I was like, I'm going to put all my clothes away, and I'll come back to it after the half. And I watched the first 5 minutes of the second half, and it was just too painful to watch, and I stopped watching after that.
Yeah, I think there were quite a few people that had a day kind of like that. And we tried to recreate, you know, we did that whole thing, well, you have to watch the game in the same place that you watch the Sweet 16 game. So I was with my family at my house watching it. And, you know, we had a good time. But it was certainly different than watching the Kentucky game, because I was nervous all day. I was just on edge. You know, I was jumpy. I didn't really want to talk to people very much. And so, you know, I'm just sitting there on my recliner waiting for the game to start, and then it starts, and I didn't get off my recliner very many times because there was just no edge to that game. I mean, it was very dark from the opening tip. And after the game, you know, we talked about in the first hour how I preferred for K-State to lose by a larger margin than them lose on a buzzer beater, because it doesn't hurt quite as much. I mean, you can come to grips with it a little bit more. And after the game, I did wander down to Aggieville because, you know, I knew that the crowd down there was pretty big for the game, wanted to see what the atmosphere was like, what the mood was like. And I'm sitting in one of my favorite establishments in Aggieville talking to one of my good friends who works there, and you know, one of the things that came to mind that we talked about was, as bums that we were about K-State losing, there was that sentiment of, but at least the fan base is back together. You know, at least we're on the same page again. And it was not the kind of tone, you know, that conversation that I had with him, some other people that I talked to that night, it was not the kind of tone that you expected from K-State fans after being stopped just short of what would have been one of the school's greatest athletic accomplishments. I mean, I know that they've been to the Final Four other times, but the tournament was smaller then. The game was not as, you know, developed and advanced as it is now. And it would have been one of the all-time great moments in K-State
sports history. And the game was ugly from start to finish. I mean, K-State did not play well in any capacity. So it had everything. I mean, it seemed like everything that could go wrong did go wrong against a team that you would say on paper was, you know, a little bit more athletic or more talented. But so it stung. What I'm trying to say is it stung like it should, and there was plenty of fuel for a meltdown, but there was no fire. There was no anger. It wasn't the sharp pain of anger and resentment. It was more the dull pain of just disappointment and sadness. Because the reason for that was because for the first time in 6 years, there was no real war to fight after a loss. Now, I know that in the first hour, we talked about, or we had, you know, the Tweet of the Moment segment. We pulled up some not-so-nice tweets from people who are still not on board with Bruce Weber, but that's every fan base everywhere. There are always going to be a select handful of fans that are not happy with the way things are going. But for the last 6 years, it's been a huge handful of those fans at K-State. And I would say for the last couple of years, it's actually been the majority. And now it's not anymore. And I think that that's the biggest takeaway that you can have from this run for K-State. I think that this is what defines this run, is the fact that K-State was able to bring back a fan base that had been so frustrated either with the program or with each other based on everything that had happened. And I've seen this from so many different angles over the last few years, arguments on the golf course, everything that happens on social media, you know, the tweets that are being sent during games. I saw that animosity and that anger and that resentment and so many different adjectives you could use. And it's finally toned down to a normal level, it feels like. And I hope that K-State fans can appreciate that, because Elite Eights don't happen every year. And this one was so significant for K-State on a number of different levels. And I think that a lot of fans realize that.
A couple of the crazy things, just thinking about how this six-year stretch with Weber has gone now. Weber and Frank Martin have now historically coached the same amount of seasons at K-State, and one of the more painful numbers is that K-State's lost 7 straight Elite Eight games that they've appeared in, which is just crazy to think about, that you couldn't at least get one of those 7. So you have to think that K-State's probably due, but I agree, it's crazy that everybody could have all these reasons to be upset, but I think this run is the one that brought everybody back together, and they're maybe bought into believing in Bruce Weber again.
I think you know, you're right in saying that we now have 6 seasons of evidence for each of the eras, I guess I should say, 6 for Huggins / Martin, and then 6 for Bruce Weber. And I was looking at a comparison of the two. Overall record still favors Frank Martin, there are some other categories that favor Bruce Weber, but that's not really the point. It wasn't the loss to Loyola that defined the tournament for K-State, nor was it really the win over Creighton, UMBC, or Kentucky. It was the entire thing. It was for, you know, a week and a half, fans realizing, you know what, this maybe wasn't the dumpster fire that we've been saying it was for a long time. And this team's got some real potential, and that's what's so awesome about the fact that K-State isn't losing anyone off of this team, because you do go into next year wondering what might be the encore to this whole thing. And I think that that spirit, that attitude, is going to drive attendance up in Bramlage next year. It's going to make for a way less turbulent offseason for K-State, and it just basically writes the ship, a ship that's been rocking back and forth pretty ferociously for the last 6 years.
Yeah, and I think one of the craziest things about it is you get everybody on board for this run. I think once Virginia loses to UMBC, that's when everybody goes, look at this, I think we can get a little bit deeper than we thought, make some noise. And then also just thinking about the fact that K-State if you just shut up and listen to what the players have been saying to you for so long, is they've backed Bruce Weber, they believe in Bruce Weber, yeah. And finally I think everybody can kind of clean their ears out and say, oh, they might have been telling us some truthful things after all.
Yeah, they love their coach. This K-State team loves its coach. And that's something that I think fans should appreciate as well, because it's one thing if you're dealing with a team that's got a ton of talent but just never has the chemistry to put it all together. We see that happen a lot with some of the most talented programs in the country. You could maybe say that about Kentucky. But it's totally different when a team completely buys in, not only to their coach, but to each other. And this program is at that level right now, and hopefully it continues.
And it's a better type of run when it's a team that maybe isn't as talented as another, but they're all bought in and they love what's going on, rather than a Kentucky situation where maybe they don't care for Calipari. They're just, we're athletic and let's play ball.
K-State may have played the role of villain on a national scale twice in this tournament, but you ask 95% of K-State fans and they, I think, will go on and on about how easy it is to cheer for this team, truly. And for that, we are, I think most K-State fans are extremely grateful and thankful that they were able to accomplish this. We'll take our next break. When we come back, wild day on the coaching carousel, notable names on the move. We'll recap them next. About 20 minutes away from K-State baseball here on News Radio KMAN. You paid attention to the coaching carousel today. Once we get to this time of year, Final Four is set. That means that a lot of schools that have those openings trying to get them filled.
Yeah, I saw Jeff Capel going to Pitt, yep. Chris Mack going to Louisville. Yep.
Those are the two big ones right there.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the reasons that this was actually interesting to me is because I think about a year ago, or at least over the course of last summer, there would have been several K-State fans who would have thought that this would be the year that K-State would be back in the head coaching market. They certainly did not see the Elite Eight run coming. I didn't either. And if K-State would have, I mean, let's just say they would have played to where they were picked in the Big 12 and finished eighth, I think K-State would be looking for a new coach. So it is kind of interesting to see the names that are moving and wonder what K-State's role might have been in this coaching carousel. But you mentioned the biggest one, Louisville getting Chris Mack from Xavier. I think that's a home run for Louisville. Now, they're a program that has a lot of FBI-related stuff to deal with, but I guess they sold Chris Mack on the idea that they're going to be able to, you know, not miss any NCAA tournaments and things like that. And, I mean, Xavier's been, I wouldn't say a powerhouse, but the next best thing.
A constant team that you have to think and keep in the back of your mind that they can compete.
They've been good, especially this year. Now, I saw that there are a lot of Xavier fans who are very upset over this move, thinking that, you know, it's one of those things that you're always going to hold your program to a higher esteem than what the reality is. And so some people are calling this a lateral move for Chris Mack. No, it is not. Xavier is not in the ACC. Louisville has resources. Now, I know that they are still, in a way, the little brother of Kentucky, but they've got resources. They have more, you know, they are more of the sleeping giant than Xavier is. I'll just put it that way.
Do you think after this all finishes up in the Final Four, do you think Porter Mosier finds himself a new job?
That's a good question. Dan Patrick was talking about this yesterday. He's getting paid, I think, $450,000 a year right now, which, you know, the beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I would certainly take that salary, but he could probably, I think their AD was indicating that they can probably go about as high as 900 or a million, and that's about where they would max out. I don't know. He has a track record that is less than good. He really does.
Yeah, and that's the surprising thing kind of about this run is that Loyola, they've struggled even the past few years of winning a lot of games, and so he hasn't had a great track record. But This is the kind of run that pushes somebody into the
it could
the coaching
be, but
circle.
I'm just saying that this guy, the stock on this guy is not what Shaka Smarts was when he was hired at Texas. Now we've seen how that's turned out, but I think that if I were him, it would be smart to go ahead and try to take another job, you know, try to get that money while it's out there, because I'm just not sure how long the magic is going to be there at Loyola. Now, you mentioned another one of the big hires today, Jeff Capel going to Pitt. It has been a disaster at Pittsburgh since Jamie Dixon left, you know, under Kevin Stallings. Really bad. But I think that that's a decent hire. I wouldn't say it's a home run like Mack going to Louisville, but it's a solid hire. And Jeff Capel, he's been everywhere. I mean, he's been around. So you feel like, you know, that's probably a decent fit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he can get Pitt back into a position where they could think about first getting to the NIT and then going on, as, you know, he kind of came and struggled at the end of his Oklahoma time. I think that also says something about how Mike Krzyzewski probably has a lot more in the tank, because I've kind of always been under the impression that I thought Capel was going to kind of hang out on the Duke bench until Krzyzewski was done.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeff Capel would take over Duke. So
yeah, a lot of people thought that. And the other impact here is Duke has the number one recruiting class in the country by a wide margin. I mean, they basically have like the entire top 10 committed. I know it's not actually that extreme, but it feels like it. And Jeff Capel is the top recruiter on Coach K's staff. So will there be some turnover there? If I were a recruit, I would still want to go play for Coach K. But yeah, there could be some interesting changes there.
That would be crazy if just immediate like that, you get one or two guys and that changes the complexion of Pitt basketball for even next year and then onward, and that'd be interesting to see.
Now, this one is funny, and it's not one that's going to be on your main radar, but you'll recall that, or maybe you weren't even paying attention. Last week, Tubby Smith was fired at Memphis. Tubby Smith is another guy who's been everywhere. He has been hired by High Point, which is his alma mater, because he did not want to retire. He wanted to keep coaching, and so his alma mater, High Point, called. I'm basically only mentioning this because he called the High Point job a dream job. And I know they're your alma mater, so you got to be nice. But really?
Well, I mean, he's already had some other dream jobs. I mean, he coached at Kentucky.
He won a national championship at Kentucky.
So now he's lived one dream. He's getting to live another. Because I'm sure when he was going to High Point, he said, if I could be the basketball coach here, that'd be perfect. I'd take that. I mean, he's getting that opportunity now.
I guess that for the first time in a long time, there won't be any expectations. You know, I don't think that the fans at High Point are really going to care how he does, as long as, you know, it's not like a absolute dumpster fire. So
I'd like to know the reaction from everybody at High Point right now, though, talking about, man, we got Tubby Smith coming in, NCAA tournament next year. Let's get him going.
Kick the tires on old Tubby Smith. Last one I wanted to mention here, this wasn't a hiring, it was a firing last night, but I just wanted to bring it up because of the tweet that I saw from Fran Fraschilla about this. You see that UT Arlington fired their coach, Scott Cross,
last night?
That may not ring any sort of a bell with you, which wouldn't really be that surprising, but Scott Cross was 72-33 in his last 3 years at UT Arlington. And that stretch included wins at Ohio State, Texas, St. Mary's, and BYU twice. They also went to an NCAA tournament in that stretch. And he got fired because, I mean, there doesn't appear to be anything else in play here other than their AD didn't think he was winning enough. So the backlash here has been pretty extreme. And this was a funny tweet that I saw from Fran Fraschilla. Last time, he tweeted in all caps, last time I will ever step in that arena. Fran Fraschilla is never going back to UT Arlington because he's so angry that they fired their coach.
I guess that just shows you how tough it can be being a small mid-major coach, that you can win ball games, but you have to win that conference tournament because you're going to get shunned from the NCAA tournament if you don't win your conference tournament. So I think that is a bigger example of that system there, which I think is fine because, you know, we don't need too many Loyolas in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I know that the shining example for every mid-major is Gonzaga. Everyone wants to become the next Gonzaga. But to become the next Gonzaga, I think you should probably hang on to the coach that has shown that he can take you on the road and win some big games, because you got to start somewhere, and I think that's a decent place.
Yeah, and I just think
that's just,
you got to realize in the state of Texas, UT Arlington, I don't think they're going to be able to make it happen.
Yeah, but
because Stephen F. Austin made the push,
right?
But
that's the comparison that comes up, is Stephen F. Austin. I don't know, man. I think that if Brad Underwood had wanted to stick around Stephen F. Austin for the long haul, I'm not saying they would have been Gonzaga, but I could have seen them being a very, very relevant, you know, kind of a top 25 college basketball program for several years. I think that could have happened. We're going to take our final break. K-State baseball coming your way in 10 minutes. We'll close up shop with You Can't Be Serious next.
Gosh, she's beautiful.
Did you hear that?
So, we'll open it up to questions.
Johnny Idiot Face over there is never going to bring you a title.
This guy sucks.
Cliff Kingsbury gets me hot and bothered, and I love it. There, I said it. That was from a man.
I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
That was a clunk. There's not much I can do about that.
You can't be serious.
Remember Johnny Manziel? As much as I try not to, still happens sometimes.
Yep.
And he was trending on Twitter worldwide today. What did he do? Well, he went to Texas A&M's Pro Day, and all 32 NFL teams were in attendance to watch Johnny Manziel throw the football. Gil Brandt reports that he heard really good things from the scouts about how Johnny Manziel looked. One even said he looked better than he did in 2014. Color me skeptical that Johnny Manziel will actually be able to... I could see him making a return to football, sure, but actually being a decent NFL player, I think that ship has sailed. I do not think we will ever see that.
Yeah, I also don't agree with the fact that all these schools are letting him participate in their pro day. He participated in the San Diego pro day a couple of weeks ago. I don't get that. Is that just San Diego looking for some more publicity at their pro day, I guess? But
and look, as far as like who the actual subject is of my You Can't Be Serious, it's only half Johnny Manziel. Half of it is that this has to be a huge story, you know, that's on the front page of ESPN, and it'll be on SportsCenter tonight. Can we get some actual, like, realism here? He's a guy that has not been in the NFL in several years. He was cut from, or when he tried out for a CFL team. Can we stop? I just don't need to hear this guy's name anymore. I'm glad that he apparently has turned his life around in terms of the off-the-field stuff. That's great. Happy for him. I just don't think that he needs to be the trending topic on Twitter every time he throws a football, which is kind of how things have gone as of late.
For me, ESPN posed the question today. I saw this. Are the Yankees an underdog because of their payroll limitations? Because now that they have Stanton and Aaron Judge.
Is that a real headline?
That was a real thing that they talked about on PTI. Are the Yanks underdogs? There is no way that the New York Yankees are underdogs. They've got plenty of talent. Yeah, that, and they've got the money, and they'll just keep spending it. The Yankees are not underdogs, nor will they ever be underdogs.
Oh, how did I not see this until now? This was a headline on Deadspin. I can't believe I didn't see this until now. The headline reads, "Amazing conspiracy theory has officials screwing Kentucky by granting them too many free throws." So the refs are to blame for losing to K-State because Kentucky shot too many free throws. How about you just make them?
That's the worst conspiracy theory I've ever heard.
That's awesome.
That's a clever way to look at it. That's a good way to find a new way to have refs taking your team's fate into their own hands.
It's a it was a forum thread on a site called Rup Rafters, which is the Kentucky rival site. Yeah. Headlines, "The officiating was very clever tonight." Man, Kentucky fans, if there's one thing that can bring K-State and KU basketball fans together, it's Kentucky. Now, I know that everyone was excited over the weekend that KU beat Duke because they're like, oh, yeah, KU did the nation a favor by beating Duke. I was not rooting for KU in that game. I'm sorry. I can't.
No, they didn't do us any favors.
No. Should be a good game with Villanova, though. Definitely excited for that one. Going to hand it off to John Kurtz and Matt Walters for K-State Baseball, Wildcats taking on Oral Roberts. Been a fun show. For Mitch Fortner, John Kurtz, and Mason Voth, I'm Tyler Dreiling. We'll talk to you tomorrow on The Game.